Bicycle Transportation Alliance.
Indeed. My name is
Kransky.
My name is Garrett Kransky.
And that's not so hard.
No, not so hard at all. And I'm here with the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. The BTA is a nonprofit organization working to create healthy and sustainable communities by making bicycling safe, convenient, and accessible. Really want to thank Mayor Adams and the commissioners, as well as PBOT staff, for the opportunity to come here and speak with you today. According to the state's injury epidemiologist, the most significant modifiable risk factors in non-motorized vehicle crashes are environmental risk factors. The built environment has extreme relevance in crash prevention. So this speaks to the need to continue Portland's commitment to designing and building world-class bicycling facilities that improve safety conditions. Though the city's bicycle data shows significant declines in crashes per capita, we know that many crashes involving bicyclists do not get reported. So we should continue engineering safety solutions that encourage broad ridership among Portlanders who are interested but concerned. A key part of that strategy is to build out the Portland Bicycle Plan for 2030, as well as, I'm sure you'll hear from Steph Routh, the pedestrian master plan. The plan envisions a future for Portland in which it is easy and convenient for people to make short trips by bike, making Portland a healthy and active city for adults and kids of all kinds, but only if it's built. Currently, PBOT is working on building 15 miles of neighborhood greenways, and this is an important first step. BTA members and supporters are organized and ready to push for good designs and broad public support for these projects. However, strong support also requires increasing funding for active transportation. Historically, active transportation projects and programs have only been funded at a fraction of our total transportation budgets. And even with the current $7 million, if we continue at that level of investment, the 2030 plan will not be complete until 2095. So only by increasing our investments can we expect to improve personal safety and community livability for all Portlanders. And we at the BTA are looking forward to working with councilors, commissioners, PBOT, as well as the still unformed finance task force to address the bicycle plan. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And how's the new executive director settling in?
He's great. He starts July 1st.
Oh, not until July 1st.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, great. He's in town today looking for a new home in Portland. So okay. We're excited to have him.
We expect it to be a very green home.
At some future point, I'd like some more information from when your new director has settled in as far as what programs you're doing to educate your riders on their safety strategies and how they can be share the road as well as drivers and pedestrians sharing the road.
Would love to talk more about our bike safety education programs with you. Thank you.
Stephanie.
Thank you. My name is Steph Routh. I'm director of the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition. The WPC is thankful for this opportunity to speak to you today about walkable neighborhoods that are safe and make good financial sense for everyone, for everyone is a pedestrian at some point in their day. I love it whenever Garrick says build it, because in my mind it's automatically translated to build them both. We have plenty to build. As of 2 months ago, only 28 out of the 146 projects in the pedestrian master plan from 1998 were partially implemented or complete. This is a huge challenge, as Mayor Adams mentioned in his opening comments. It is a noble challenge that we can all work on together. Walkable neighborhoods are fundamental to the Portland plan and to the future of our city, and cycling will help connect those neighborhoods. What is a 20-minute walking neighborhood? It is compact with good walkable infrastructure. It has direct, obvious, and safe routes, and they are equitable environments. They allow children to walk or bike safely to school. They allow people to grow older in their own neighborhoods and provide access to local goods and services for everyone. The benefits of the 20-minute walkable neighborhood for me are twofold, and I think that they're the reason that we're all here today. One is economics, also called personal finance for me. In 2008, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor and Statistics, the average American household spent the same amount, almost dollar for dollar, on gasoline as it did in health care. So making good walkable and cyclable alternatives to driving just put put money back in people's pockets. And I think that that's something that we can all agree on. And safety is obviously the second. I believe everyone in this room has been touched in some way by recent tragedies on our streets. Decreasing collisions between vehicles and people walking is our number one priority. And there is no better way to do this than to give people options to driving. Realizing priority projects that make neighborhoods more walkable and connected and support sidewalks and crossing safety projects are a great step forward, and I thank you for your leadership in all of it. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you both. Portlanders, we've had the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition and the Bicycle Transportation Alliance and other partners, community partners, for so long. I think that if Portlanders have lived here a long time, they think that every city is this lucky. And every city is not this lucky to have such fantastic community-based safety and utilization advocates. So thank you very much. I also want to, before we move on, just, we'll go to who's doing Safe Routes to Schools? Olivia and Lori, is that right? Come on up, thank you. And I'm not even going to attempt your wonderful last name. If you wouldn't mind introducing yourselves.
Good morning, Mayor Sam Adamson and Commissioners. My name is Olivia Quiroz, and I'm the Program Coordinator for Multnomah County Healthy Eating, Active Living Coalition, acronym HEAL, with the Community Wellness and Prevention Program. For the past 4 years, the HEAL Coalition has been a partner with Safe Routes to School to address and identify environmental factors, including transportation design, that influence healthy eating and active living. The partnership with the Bureau of Transportation and the Health Department supports a comprehensive approach to create safe and healthy communities. Programs like Safe Routes to School is a key partner to help reduce the rates of childhood obesity by promoting active living in school communities. In a recent report from the Center for Disease Control, Oregon was ranked as the number one state having significant decline rates of childhood obesity. Although childhood obesity rates have declined, we still have much work to do. The HEAL Coalition and Safe Routes to School program recognize the importance to address equity, health, safety, to ensure resources are sensitive and reach the needs of low-income schools and diverse communities. Providing accessible active modes of transportation and safe walkable streets will give opportunities for students and families to become more physically active and thrive in their communities. This map demonstrates the growth of Safe Routes to School in Portland, which now extends over 70 schools throughout the city. Portland's racial and ethnic demographics have also increased in the past several years. James John Elementary and Clarendon Portsmouth School, who are part of the Safe Routes to School program and part of the HEAL Coalition, have a Latino student population of more than 50%. East County also has the highest numbers of immigrant and refugee communities. And although Safe Routes to School program is expanding, East County schools are also in need of more resources. Safe Routes to School has responded to the needs of ethnic groups by providing materials in 6 languages, including Spanish, Vietnamese, and Russian. These are the most common languages spoken in Portland, Parkrose, and David Douglas school districts. Safe Routes to School has also applied an equity lens to the geographic and economic diversity in Portland. Latino volunteers are provided with tools and trainings in Spanish. Cultural and language appropriate materials and resources have supported and encouraged Latino parent volunteers to lead Safe Routes to School campaigns at their schools. The HEAL Coalition and support from the Safe Routes to School engineer team led a community research project at Clarendon Portsmouth School. Parents involved in this project helped to identify barriers to walking and biking to school. The findings from this report included traffic congestion problems in the school's parking lot and incomplete sidewalks. This project led to a larger community planning process, and parents were active advocates and made recommendations to the Safe Routes to School program for engineering improvements at their school. Walk to School days have now become a cultural norm for our schools that are part of the Safe Routes to School program. Parent and teacher volunteers lead monthly walks from the old Clarendon Elementary School, and together with their students, they walk to their new K-8 school. Rain or shine, students carry their signs that promote physical activity and healthy eating messages. The Stop and Walk program encourages parents who drive their kids to school to stop further away from their school and walk with their children. These healthy promotional activities are very well attended and have helped to increase and integrate physical activity into the school's curriculum. Clarendon and Portsmouth school neighbors have also joined in the efforts to promote physical activity in their community. A family walking group has been formed, and parents who have taken the Safer Routes to School trainings now lead the walks every Saturday morning. With support and funding from Safe Routes to School program, the bike racks that were once in the back of the school and have now been moved to the front of the school. Today, parents feel more safe, send their kids on bikes, and students can ride their bikes to school with pride and excitement. Thank you for supporting the Safe Routes to School program and for your time today to speak with you.
Thank you very much for your great work on this.
Good morning, Mayor Adams and commissioners. My name is Lori Paulson, and I am the parent of two daughters who attend Beach Elementary School in North Portland. And I want to thank you for supporting Safe Routes to School. Safe Routes to School is a fantastic investment in our kids and our schools. It encourages kids to get to school in a way that is healthy and safe. It builds communities. And most important, kids arrive to school ready to learn. And as a former teacher, when kids arrive to school ready to learn, that is a huge help to our school system. There's also the community benefits. There's decreased cars on the road, decreased cars around the school, less carbon emissions, less money spent on gas, which more money goes to our local businesses. One of the efforts around at Beach is the Stop and Walk program and also the bike train. There has been a big momentum around at Beach around the bike train. This is Nora and her family on the slide. The bike train, one of the bike trains starts at her North Portland home, 3 miles away from school. She rides with her students or with her kids down a pre-designated route and picks up other students along the way. There's two adults riding and a group of kids. The bike train has made her more comfortable riding to school. 2 years ago, biking was discouraged in the student handbook at Beach. And because of Safer Routes to School, we now have 3 times the bike racks, which are always overflowing. And next year, the student handbook is slated to read, "At Beach, we walk and bike to school." One of those, I'll go back to that, one of those bikes is Colleen's. And Colleen took part in the Safer Routes to School 5th grade education a few weeks ago. She didn't know how to ride a bike. In 2 weeks, she learned how to ride a bike and how to ride safely on the streets. She then went home and talked to her neighbors about getting a loaner bike for her 2nd grade brother. She taught her 2nd grade brother how to ride a bike. Her dad then pulled his bike out of the basement, which had been there since 1991. The mom got a bike. Last weekend, I stopped by their house. They are on a family bike ride. Every day, Colleen and their family rides to school. These are the success stories of Safer Routes to School. So thank you for your support, for making kids healthier, keeping them safe, and getting them ready to learn.
Thank you both very, very much. Very effective. All right. That gets us to the invited presentation. Is anyone signed up to testify? You can turn up the lights.
No one has signed up.
Anyone wish to testify in this matter? Any questions or discussion from council? I'll entertain a motion to accept the report.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Sue, would you please call the vote?
Fish.
I want to thank everyone who testified, PBOT, the mayor, Sue Keel, for a very comprehensive look at how we're tackling the question of safety in our community. And for those people that think that governments don't collaborate enough, I think this report indicates quite dramatically a terrific level of collaboration and partnership across government jurisdictions and government. And I have to say, as the parent of 2 children in public school who also cares deeply about safe routes to schools, I would particularly appreciate the update that we had at the end. This is great work, and there's some linkages with some other bureaus. As I was listening to parts of your presentation, I was thinking about how parks could become a partner on some of the things that you're contemplating. But it's great to get this sort of big picture view of this, and I'm very pleased this was on our agenda this morning. Thanks to all, and thank you, Mayor, for your leadership.
Thank you.
Hi.
Saltzman.
Well, this is great work, and I want to thank the mayor for his leadership and for all the
key participants, the community groups, Willamette Pedestrian Coalition, BTA, TriMet, ODOT, Portland Police, PBOT. I think it's really, the statistics are, somewhat encouraging, except with respect to pedestrian fatalities, which are on the rise. I think, one thing we touched upon a few weeks ago when we were discussing renewing our contracts with our red light cameras and our photo radar participants was, do we have the ability to cite people with our photo radar, particularly which are used around school zones, if they are also on their cell phone or texting, and that's in the photo. Do we have the ability to issue additional citations? That is something I'm going to continue to explore with both the city attorney's office and the police bureau, because I think we can't leave anything on the table when it comes to getting people to drive safely, particularly around school zones. And so this is something I will continue to pursue. But this is a great report, and appreciate it. Aye.
Fritz. Well, this is very helpful. Thank you so much for everybody who presented and for this great partnership. Thank you, Mayor Adams, for your ongoing leadership on this. You're right, it has been a very challenging task, and I, for one, am very grateful that you continue to be Transportation Commissioner and do this work. Also recognize Sue Keel, the Director of the Office of Transportation, and Rosie Sizer, the Police Chief, who have been very integrally involved in this. The summit was wonderful. I had good reports from lots of folks at the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition, the Bicycle Transportation Alliance, Multnomah County Courts, Legacy Emanuel Hospital, and Elders in Action were a few of the partners that helped make that so successful. So this is reaching out to people in the community, involving them in the safety of their community, our community. And it explains, this report has explained very clearly why it is in all of our best interest to fund these needed safety improvements. None of us wants to be involved in an accident, whether on the receiving end of it or on the causing end of it, and we need to provide infrastructure, basic infrastructure in every neighborhood that prevents these crashes where at all possible. So thank you very much, and I'm committed to continuing to work on that. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank Katja Dillman and Catherine Charlo and Ginny Peckinpah in the mayor's office, who have, I rely on every day on my own personal staff for just superb work in this area. Really appreciate it. I want to reinforce that, I'm lucky I get up every morning and work with the best local transportation department in the entire United States and the best, traffic safety division in a police bureau in the United States and best non-governmental advocates and other transit agencies. And I really appreciate that, because I would just want to underscore how difficult it has been and a lack of adequate funding to do anything on this issue. And if it wasn't for that collaboration and trying to make sure that nothing gets lost in a gap between jurisdictions, we would be in a much worse position than we are now. I want to underscore my thanks, though, to this city council, who've had to make very difficult trade-off decisions at my recommendation, but I think have really showed that safety of a life, prevention of an injury, is more important than, strangely, even some political expedient decisions. And the lack of resources, we have prioritized life and safety over smooth neighborhood streets. We do not do the kind of maintenance that we once did, because spreading it so thin means we're not focused on the busiest streets, which is the priority of this council, for maintenance and for life and safety. So smooth streets have been prioritized or deprioritized over life and safety. We have, at great political controversy, forced collaboration among bureaus. The whole Green Street brouhaha is about getting more than just value from one bureau, but requiring multiple values by having bureaus work together. And this city council did that, even though it was incredibly controversial, and they prioritized that life and safety effort over the political safety of doing it the way it's always been done. And two of my colleagues who are up for election are taking heat for this, and I just want to acknowledge that in the campaign trail, and I just want to acknowledge their courage for doing the right thing even if it has been mangled into by others into something other than it is. So I want to thank you both for that. We're doing everything we possibly can. We will continue to do so. And I encourage everyone not to sign the petition that is circulating in this state. And I can say this from up here. My staff can't say this. Not to sign the petition that would refer House Bill 2001 to a vote. That is about not only maintaining our assets, the billions of dollars that citizens across Oregon have made in the transportation system. It is also about saving lives and reducing injuries. So thank you. Bye. Let's move to the third time certain, out of courtesy to some of our guests. Sue, can you please read item number 609?
Free-for-all summer sponsorship.
Commissioner Nick Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to invite Zeri Santner and Dave Wiederich to come forward, and I have a brief opening remark. Thank you. Mayor and colleagues, we have a great tradition at parks of providing family-friendly activities in the summertime, and we're very proud of what we've been able to accomplish in the past: free movies, free concerts, free swims, playgrounds, meals. In good times, these programs are important. During tough times, they're essential. And as you will recall, last year we faced a minor crisis when our lead sponsor of many years for the Washington Park Summer Festival pulled out amid some uncertainty about whether they would continue to have a viable presence here in Portland. There was a remarkable coming together of our community, of people who stepped up to maintain the Washington Park Summer Festival, which is a 60-year-old tradition, but also dozens of other individuals and businesses that stepped up to make sure that we would have what we call a summer free-for-all. And these are our free programs throughout our system. We depend heavily on public-private partnerships. In fact, this year, in presenting our lineup of movies and concerts, we have over 50 sponsors, good corporate citizens who have said this is important that we encourage free family-friendly activities, particularly during tough times. One of the highlights of our series, of course, is the concert series at Washington Park. And I encourage you all to pencil it in. It's August 5 through 14. And because of the size and scale of this, where we reach in a good season over 30,000 people who come out to enjoy a wide range of music, we need a lead sponsor. I am so pleased this year to announce that Daimler is back. And they're back with us as our lead presenting sponsor. Now, we know that Daimler is a good corporate citizen, and this is not surprising to me that they have stepped up once again. But to those who ask the question, what does it matter to have a headquartered business here in town? What does it matter to have an assembly line operation? Well, of course, it matters because it brings jobs and revenue to our community. But it also captures good corporate citizens who then turn around and say, in addition to our business, how can we help make Portland a better place? And that's been the tradition at Daimler, and we are so proud to announce today that they are back as our presenting sponsor, and because of their generosity, we'll be able to offer a full 10 evenings of first-rate music at Washington Park. I'm going to turn it over to Zeri Santner, the director of our bureau, and I'm going to introduce Dave Wiederich, who's here from Daimler. We're going to give each a moment to say a few things, and then at the end I want to just highlight a couple of the things that I hope people pencil in that I'll be attending, and I want to encourage others to get out and join with us. Zeri?
Good morning, Commissioner. Zeri Santner, Director of Parks and Recreation. I'm very, very pleased to be here this morning to acknowledge and recognize Daimler for sponsoring a signature event of our summer free-for-all activities. You all are aware of the fact that Portland Parks provide low-cost recreation programs throughout our system throughout the year. But summertimes, given our gorgeous weather, is a time wherein the demand for outdoor recreation is at its heights. And that's why we have created the Summer Free for All program, programs such as concerts and movies in parks, family swim time in all of our pools, playground, summer playground program in parks where we provide safe, supervised, day-long activities for children. In some cases, we provide free lunch to children. As Commissioner Fish mentioned, over 50 businesses, individuals, neighborhood associations, civic organizations contribute to many of these free activities. And Washington Park Summer Festival is the signature offering of this program. A little bit of history about this program. It started in 1940s, again, with the diva of the Parks Recreation, Dorothea Lynch. And it continued to late 80s with funding from the city and from sponsorship. And then it went, the stage at Washington Park went dark for almost two decades. 5 years ago, we were delighted to get a proposal from Daimler with an offer to be the lead sponsor for this much-loved and still-remembered program by our citizens. We, for 4 years, Daimler funded this program, and we had a lineup for 2 weeks in August where thousands of people delighted in the offerings that we provided. And most importantly, we gave a venue to showcase the artists and the performers that this city is blessed with. As you heard from our commissioner last year, Daimler decided that it could not afford to continue this partnership. When now retired chief executive officer of Daimler, Chris Patterson, called us to inform us about this decision, he described it as a hiatus. He said that once the financial situation with the company improves, they intend to come back. Obviously, we are incredibly pleased, both because the Daimler's financial situation has improved and the fact that they have kept their promise. Last year, we had, with Commissioner Fish's help and many others, we had a we made an effort and continued the program, but we really needed a lead sponsor, and we are very, very pleased that Daimler is back. And also, this program is going to be assisted by funds from other businesses, Safeway, Mark Spencer Hotel, and Trailblazers. I want to extend the Bureau's appreciation to Daimler for supporting this program for the past 5 years. And most importantly, I want to extend our thanks to Dave Widrick, who has been working with our staff for the past 5 years and has been the most wonderful and collaborative partner that we could ever ask for. Dave?
Hey, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much. On behalf of Daimler Trucks North America, we appreciate the opportunity to be recognized in this way. It, as you mentioned, it was never a matter of if we were to come back, but certainly when we could, and we're very pleased that we're able to do that. I would like to extend from our new CEO, Martin Daum, who is in Germany right now, which he does frequently, as you can imagine. Otherwise, he would be here today. He sends his regards, and certainly it's to his credit that we are back doing what we're doing today. One of the things that I would like to express is my appreciation to Zari's staff, specifically Lisa Turpel, who has been the other half of that collaborative effort, and it's been a very, very good one. One thing that that we're doing as well is, in addition to coming back to the Summer Festival, We're also able to, again, field a float in the Rose Festival Starlight Parade, which we also had to remove ourselves from last year. And in an attempt to be as efficient as possible in designing a theme for the float, we've decided that we will depict the amphitheater in Washington Park and have a band playing and promote the Washington Park Summer Festival, do our best to recreate that beautiful space in a 53-foot trailer. So we'll see how that works. But for everyone listening, it's important to know that Commissioner Fish has expressed interest in walking with us in the parade and shoulder to shoulder with our float. And the theme is going to be one that is what's greener than a park, and that is one of our Freightliner natural gas powered vehicles. So if Commissioner Fish is going to be joining us, and we're happy to have you, I felt it would probably be appropriate to equip him with the proper uniform, and so I've brought a Freightliner cap for him.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Dave. We're proud. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Dave, we are very fortunate to have this partnership, and to just give people a taste of what we have planned. We have posted on portlandparks.org the complete list of the summer free-for-all. If you love opera, on Friday, August 6th in Washington Park, there'll be a full opera performance by Portland Opera of Il Trovatore. If you love jazz, on Saturday, August 7th, the great female vocalists of Portland on stage for the first time all together celebrating jazz. If you like Do Jump, on Friday, August 13th, which will also be the night that we do a special appreciation for Daimler, that will be a performance. I have a couple of young kids, and I was looking at the movies in the parks. We'll be going to Ed Benedict Park on Saturday, July 17th, to see Transformers. Tom Miller, Chief of Staff to Mayor Adams, will be at the Glenhaven Park on Friday, August 13th, to see Death Bowl to Downtown, the evolution of skateboarding in New York City. Tom is a skateboarding fan.
Brendan Finn will be there.
Brendan Finn of Dan's office. But I also want to emphasize that thanks to the generosity of people throughout our community, there will be great music in community parks throughout our city, and I'll give you an example. I happen to be a big fan of Daryl Grant, Professor Grant, the jazz guy from both who teaches at PSU and is celebrated in our community. Well, Daryl will be performing at Willamette Park on July 21st. Stephanie Schneiderman was profiled in the newspaper recently as one of the up-and-coming bands. She's performing at Fernhill Park on July 9th. And if you like Devin Phillips, who, by the way, is America's ambassador to jazz, and he follows in the footsteps of Louis Armstrong and some of the greats, designated by our federal government as America's ambassador to jazz. He'll be performing at two different venues, including Fernhill Park on August 3rd with his band. So there's an incredible, rich array of programs. This is movies, concerts, and if you look at the website, you'll also find opportunities for free swims and free recreational opportunities across our rec centers. But there's still one piece left to be resolved, and that will not be announced until the mayor releases his budget. And I'm not going to give away the surprise, but I want to simply say that there's been some tremendous behind-the-scenes work, and I want to compliment Commissioner Saltzman in particular, to find a way to maintain our teen programs this summer, which is one of our most popular programs, and to maintain our playground program, which is one of not only our most important programs, but as many of you know, we link up our playground programs with federally subsidized meal programs. And for children that don't get enough healthy food, it's an opportunity to make sure they get at least one healthy meal a day. We hope that there's some good news in the mayor's budget. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes work going on in that. But I just want to thank you. I also am pleased that you acknowledged Lisa Turple, who has worked so hard on this. And Lisa and I sometimes argue about our respective musical tastes, but I've learned to defer to her judgment because the lineup is outstanding. And We're very pleased to be able to offer this program. And again, we encourage people to go to portlandparks.org to learn more about it. I'd also like to thank Emily Hicks of my team, who's here, who's been working on it with the whole team at Parks. So thank you, and I'll turn to my colleagues if they have any comments.
I have a question. Thank you, Commissioner Fish. Other than the staff time, the significant staff time that Commissioner Fish just mentioned, this is all private sponsorships providing these programs?
Yes. From neighborhood associations, civic organizations, individuals, and businesses, large and small.
So in other words, because we don't have any general fund dollars to provide this staycation entertainment, the private sector and good citizens all over Portland have stepped up to donate to make sure that people have something to do over the summer?
The summer, our pool program is funded by general fund.
Right. Yes. All of these entertainment, the concerts
yes.
in the park,
yes.
it's all sponsorships.
Yes. It's all private funding.
And I think that's a very important point that yes. Commissioner Fritz is making, because we had an announcement a month and a half ago that Nike had stepped up to provide uniforms for all the children in our basketball programs. Bank of America stepped up in partnership with another corporate sponsor to provide movies in the parks. Daimler at Washington Park. So at a time when we don't have the general fund resources to maintain these great events, but when they're needed more than ever, we depend on the generosity of good corporate citizens and neighborhood associations and individuals who have stepped up to help us do it. And it, to me, is the best of the public-private partnerships that allow us to deliver the services people want and need.
So thank you very much to Daimler for doing that. And will you have a list of all the sponsors posted on your website?
Yes, in all the programs and on the website, absolutely.
Great, thank you.
Yes.
Well, I would certainly like to welcome Daimler back and thank you for your past support as well.
Indeed.
Did I hear you say you make natural gas-powered trucks?
Yes.
Oh. Is that a large market? A percentage
of it actually is growing. We started that with the initial push was with the ports of Long Beach and Los Angeles in their efforts to help clean up that port area. And the response to those vehicles has been very, very good. So we're continuing to expand both compressed natural gas and liquefied natural gas.
Great. That's very, very much, much cleaner than diesel. So
Commissioner Fish will have a Freightliner hat to go with his walking with his Freightliner in the parade. So.
When Commissioner Saltzman and I are next in the market for a 16-wheel rig for our personal use,
absolutely,
we're going to make Freightliner our first choice. Daimler and Freightliner our first choice. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Really appreciate you being here. This was just a presentation, so there's no council action. Other than I hope that my colleagues will join me at a number of these events, and I hope that the public that is watching, including our friend Commissioner Leonard, who's watching us live from California, will join us as well. Carla, would you please read Time Certain 608? Excuse me, not Carla. My apologies.
608, authorize an exemption to the competitive bidding process pursuant to ORS 279C and City Code 5.34, and provide for construction of certain Green Street facilities funded by 1% for Green and replacement of certain publicly owned culverts funded by Great to Green.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. President. While this is a rather technical item through procurement services, I felt it was also a good opportunity to inform Council about some exciting habitat restoration work that will be happening over the next few years. The city's culvert replacement program improves habitat for fish listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Program by replacing culverts that hinder fish passage. The city's current focus is to replace 9 Crystal Spring Creek culverts over the next 5 years. Most of these culverts are publicly owned, and those would be processed through our normal competitive bidding process. But in the cases where a private party has offered to assist with culvert replacement, this exemption from our normal process is needed to expedite the work and to ultimately save taxpayers' money. One such example is Reed College, who is partnering with the city to construct a Green Street and to replace its culvert at Southeast 28th Avenue as a component of the college's larger, long-term, voluntary stream restoration efforts. We do have staff from Reed College with us today to highlight their efforts which would be one of the first such projects to require the exemption from the competitive bidding process. This is an emergency ordinance because the in-stream culvert construction is limited to summer months, and contracts must be in place by June 1st to complete these projects within this window. So we have Caitlin Lovell and Dennis O'Connor, a consultant for Reed College, will make a presentation to us.
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman. Good morning, Commissioners, Mayor Adams. My name is Caitlin Lovell. I'm the manager of the Science, Fish, and Wildlife Program for the City of Portland, formerly the Endangered Species Act Program. Joining me also today are Jennifer Bates from Reed College and Dennis O'Connor, who's helping to design the project. So I'm going to provide some context and background, and Reed will then provide the overview and their great efforts in the canyon to restore the headwaters of Crystal Springs. Culverts are an important infrastructure tool. They allow streets and other structures to cross streams and water bodies, and they also facilitate the shedding of stormwater from our impervious surfaces. The downside is that historically we've built them without regard to the streams that they impact. The result is that over 200 known culverts in Portland impair the fish and wildlife from accessing pretty good habitat upstream, and many of those also cause localized flooding. As a consequence, we've seen salmon, steelhead, and other native fish populations decline. Streams are acting more like ditches, and property owners can actually experience losses during large floods. These effects are particularly exacerbated in the face of climate change. And you can see here, I had to identify what the fish was, but this is a fish trying to get up a culvert in Johnson Creek. And this is the problem that we're dealing with.
That's so sad.
The upside is that
did
there's
he make
a solution.
It?
No.
Did you help him?
I believe they did. This was before my time.
Mayor's helpless fish.
Sam, it's a she.
Sorry. I jumped to the wrong. I apologize, Commissioner.
Hopefully we won't have to do that in the future because we do have a solution. And it's a fix that allows the urban infrastructure to remain while the stream habitats improve and stormwater is realized for what it is, an important part of the hydrological cycle that streams actually need. In 2000, City Council committed to helping recover salmon and steelhead in response to their listing under the Endangered Species Act. Greater Green has realized this potential, and I am very pleased to be here today to share with you how this seemingly simple infrastructure fix has actually turned into a community-supported, full-scale watershed restoration effort in the heart of the city. And I'm also here to ask for your help in supporting this exemption from competitive bidding, which will allow one of these projects in this watershed to move forward this summer. So a little background about Greater Green. One of the programs within Greater Green directed us to replace 8 culverts in 5 years, and of the $50 million identified, $2 million were allocated to this effort, which is a great foundation. And, of course, the immediate question is, which 8? So we had a number of different alternatives. The first was that we had this inventory of 200 culverts, and we updated them with the current information, and we could take the top 8. Or we could spread it around equally among each of the watersheds within the city, or we could try to match it up with the best habitat in the city. So we convened actually a steering committee that has been incredibly helpful in directing our work and getting us down this path. It included representatives from the federal government, from NOAA Fisheries and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, from the state, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, from the city, the bureaus of environmental services, parks and transportation, and then also a representative from the Johnson Creek Watershed Council, who was also in charge of culvert replacements for the U.S. Forest Service. So we had the benefit of great minds helping us. And their recommendation was simple. Put the money and effort where it will have the most benefit for fish. So first we asked, where is the best habitat potential in the city? And then we worked backwards. The answer was immediately clear. Crystal Springs jumped out as this obvious choice. It's located in Selwood. It's the first major tributary in Johnson Creek, and there's no barrier between it and the ocean, save Portland Harbor. In a city where temperature flashiness and water quality are lethal to salmon, Crystal Springs jumped out as much for what it is as for what it's not. It's actually got very cold water. It's a spring-fed system, so it's got constant flow. It's relatively clean, in part because most of the drainage is actually in the combined sewer system, so we don't have a lot of the pollutants from the stormwater entering the stream system. It's low in the system and low gradient, which are prime attributes to fish, and a majority of the watershed is actually in public ownership. There are conveniently 9 impassable culverts within the system, and they're mostly impassable to juvenile fish. In addition, back in the early 2000s, we had initiated an effort to replace four culverts in the system as part of the Army Corps of Engineers 206 program. But when the Iraq war started, the money dried up for that effort. But the initial legwork had been done. It is, by far, an unparalleled stream in the city for salmon recovery. The goals are within reach in a short amount of time, and we expect salmon and steelhead to respond immediately. Furthermore, it opens up the opportunity for the first ever Endangered Species Act reintroduction program in Portland for chum. Known to highly correlate to springs, Crystal Springs Creek is actually one of the few sites in the entire Willamette Basin where we could see a reintroduction effort. And it's not just about salmon. While 137 species depend on salmon, and a few more depend on Crystal Springs, like native freshwater mussels, painted turtles, and red-legged frogs. In a recent survey of Crystal Springs, we contracted with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife from 2008 to 2009 to inventory fish in all city tributaries. In Crystal Springs, they found almost 6,000 fish, 99.9% of which were native. This is an incredible number of fish in this small stream. And here, this map is a little bit hard to see, but in order to make this happen, according to PBOT's estimates, that $2 million, we needed to leverage 10 to 1 to get the work done. And when we stepped back and thought about it, it's really hard to leverage money for culvert replacements. But what we were really doing was a watershed restoration. These are just the boxes that you see here pointing throughout Crystal Springs are just the public efforts involved. And the three that I want to kind of highlight for you are the first ones that we're working on, which is replacing the culvert at Umatilla Street, replacing a private carport, and replacing a culvert at Tenino Street. And this is the aerial view of that. So you can see the kind of urbanization that we're dealing with and the opportunity that we have. We approached the house there, the Brannan culvert, we had approached back in 2003. They have a carport that sits over the stream. And the original plan was to just remove the carport and replace it with a fish-friendly structure. With the passage of time, the situation had changed, and we reapproached the family. Their circumstances had changed, and the vision of a whole-scale watershed restoration was so impressive that they not only became willing sellers of their property, but they actually generously donated a portion of the sale price to the effort, and I'm just humbled by that generosity. They did so. They actually built this house and lived in it for 30 years, and they did this knowing that it was actually going to be deconstructed, and the entire property would be restored and made a neighborhood amenity. But that's the kind of...
It's not just the carport. You're saying the entire property.
The entire house. I have a picture of it. They're really excited about this. But this is a picture of the house from the backyard, and that's what it looks like today. And where this green trailer is actually where the stream is. So that is all going to be removed and the floodplain restored and planted. And we'll even have a trail there so that the neighbors can go and access it and see what kind of restoration we have going on there. We also know that fish are using this area. We witnessed coho actually here trying to spawn in this very area this past fall. There are tremendous partnerships happening. Metro has given us a $311,000 grant, which you just approved today in the consent agenda. So thank you very much for accepting that award. The Johnson Creek Watershed Council, Friends of Crystal Springs, TriMet in Westmoreland Pond has been directing some of their mitigation dollars for the Portland-Milwaukee light rail. They're going to actually help parks realize their master plan in Westmoreland Pond, which realizes our watershed restoration efforts. The neighbors and residents of Smile, and of course Reed College, who's here today. And I want to just say, following the traffic study, this is a little bit more upbeat about the traffic safety report, but actually in this area around the Brannan property, there have been traffic concerns and safety issues raised by the neighbors, and we've actually heard and listened to that, and we are now meeting with transportation on a biweekly basis to look at the different alternatives so that we can not only get stream restoration, but also stormwater improvements and traffic improvements in this area. So this project has actually been, these lower three have been delayed a year. We were hoping to go forward this summer. But the one project that is going forward this year that we do need the exemption for is Reed College. So I'd like to turn it over to them. And that's that. Let's see. So what's this one?
Right there. Great, thank you. Well, as Caitlin mentioned, Crystal Springs is a 2.1-mile-long spring-fed creek that drains into Johnson Creek before entering the Willamette. The project that we're discussing is located at the headwaters of Crystal Springs on the Reed College campus, where this cold, clear, high-quality groundwater bubbles from the multiple springs on the site on our campus. City-funded watershed planning efforts over the years have repeatedly identified Crystal Springs, especially its headwaters, as a high priority for restoration to benefit steelhead, cutthroat trout, and coho spawning and rearing habitat. Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife sampling of Crystal Springs in 2001-2002 gave the creek the second highest index of biotic integrity score, which was 52 out of a possible 75, of all the tributaries sampled in the city. Species observed by Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife in their study included lamprey, cutthroat trout, coho salmon, rainbow trout, steelhead, chinook, and more. In addition to fish species, the Reed College Campus Canyon could or does support healthy populations of western pond and painted turtles in the lake, red-legged frog, Pacific tree frog, salamander species, wood ducks, blue herons, kingfishers, and beavers, among others. For decades, the Reed College Canyon existed as a neglected jewel in the heart of campus. Students avoided it, neighbors kept out of it, and alumni exchanged stories with each other about the overgrown tangle of weeds surrounding the old swimming pool in the canyon. But in 1998, conversations with an alumni supporter led to a lead gift of $50,000 for the canyon's restoration. This gift launched a five-year project that removed invasive species, improved the creek running through the canyon, removed the old swimming pool and replaced it with a fish ladder, and planted native species to create a welcoming habitat for wildlife. In addition to alumni, Reed College raised funds for this project from a wide array of funders, including Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, the City of Portland's Bureau of Environmental Services, and a number of private foundations. In the years since the project got underway, the Reed College Canyon has become a cherished feature of campus and of Portland, itself. Neighbors walk along the trail that rings the lake, and parents bring their children to watch birds glide along the lake surface. Though the bulk of the restoration project lasted between 1998 and 2003, Reed College has demonstrated its support for this project by continuing to fund the restoration work in the canyon to this day. Since 1998, $1.5 million has been spent on the first phase of this restoration project. $500,000 of that was composed of grants and gifts from individual supporters. The remaining $1 million has been funded by Reed College's operating budget. The implementation of the college's canyon enhancement strategy over the last 8 years has achieved the following objectives. We've improved the observed diversity of wildlife habitat within the 26-acre Reed Canyon and within the city of Portland by managing invasive species and restoring native plant communities throughout the site. It's contributed to the health of the 54-square-mile Johnson Creek watershed overall by protecting the water quality of the Crystal Springs headwaters on the Reed College campus. Increased potential habitat for salmon and other resident fish species by providing effective fish passage via the fish ladder to the Reed Lake, the only naturally occurring pond or lake remaining in the inner city area as identified in the Johnson Creek Basin Protection Plan. Through the plan, we've contributed to efforts by the City of Portland to respond to the National Marine Fisheries Service's listing of 8 species of salmon and steelhead in Washington and Oregon as threatened and 1 species endangered. We provided a vibrant educational outreach program to local schools, neighbor groups, and environmental organizations. Each year, hundreds and hundreds of children take guided tours of the canyon. And twice each year, Reed invites the public to Canyon Day, a day-long event full of opportunities to take part in the ongoing restoration work of the canyon. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Dennis O'Connor, who will talk about our next phase of this project.
So the next phase of our Crystal Springs Enhancement Project includes extending the canyon habitat west onto recently acquired property adjacent to the campus. There is a minimal direct stormwater influence on the creek, as Caitlin mentioned, and Southeast 28th Avenue is the one area where we do have stormwater influences. So while the water quality and quantity and riparian vegetation is good up above this area, the ability for migrating species to come in through this culvert, they're not able to access the habitat, large wood and the deep pools and the overhanging cover to get up. So the proposed actions, I don't know if you've been to the site, but we're going to remove the concrete and wood walls that are on the channel that had been channelized straight right through the farm property. And we're going to re-meander the creek and widen it to 6 feet. And we're going to increase the length of it from 325 feet to 400 feet. We're going to put in a total of 10 new pools and riffles, and we're going to add large wood and use the existing gravels on the site to support fish spawning and rearing habitat. There's some small-scale springs that come out through the property, too, and we're going to make small channels and plant those with natives and use those to regenerate the water in the new channel. And we're also going to put large cedar and Douglas fir logs to the channel and floodplains as the channel is being reconstructed. And then on the new banks of the creek, we're going to use root wads and put those in an overhanging fashion. And then we're going to put cuttings of willow and dogwood in along the bank, and that's going to help create cover for the fish along the new stream. Reed College will also install a vegetated bioswale that will intercept the stormwater runoff at Southeast 28th Avenue and treat it before it enters the creek. The swale will be planted with native vegetation. Also, the entire site will be planted. The non-native species will be removed, and the site will be revegetated with the riparian and wetland plant community found upstream of the site. The upland portion of the farm property will also be a meadow oak prairie habitat. And then the Southeast 28th Avenue culvert is the most impassable culvert on Crystal Springs. So that culvert will be replaced with a 4-foot by 12-foot cast-in-place box culvert with a natural channel bottom and passable slope.
Is that the culvert we're looking at?
That's the existing culvert.
Yeah.
So in closing, we just want to tell you that we are committed to restoring the watershed habitat on campus. We've invested significant amounts of time and money and have appreciated the partners who have helped us, including you, the city. We recognize this is an important project for the college and for the city, and we look forward to working together on it.
Thank you. No, that's it.
Is there anyone here that wishes to, or any discussion from council? So I want to check out a rumor I heard, and the rumor is that fish have been spotted in the middle of Reed College.
Yeah, could you get that video?
Yeah, video. Did I miss it?
Video. You did not.
Okay.
We have technological difficulties is what we have.
Okay. And my impression, Commissioner, is every time we remove one of these barriers, we actually get a lot more fish utilization than our wildest, most positive estimates.
I think Caitlin mentioned that in her statement, that the fish find out right away and they start migrating to their new and improved habitat.
They do.
They communicate well.
And I just want to confirm that beautiful young female fish you did help up into the pipe?
Let me get my technical staff up here. Oh, apparently not. We turned it downstream.
Oh. Oh, really? Okay.
Does the bottom left have a little... There we
go. Oh, this is not wanting to play.
Sue, can you help him? You cannot?
I can.
Okay.
Do we have internet? We can pull
is
it
Is anyone else?
Yes.
Yeah, is there a teenager?
Yeah,
exactly.
In the canyon.
It's Amanda's line.
Is there a teenager in the audience? Yeah.
We'll go to the site. So there's actually a camera in the fish ladder.
Oh, yeah.
That's too bad.
Filming the activity.
Oh, well. We'll post it on your website later. Great. All right, unless there is anyone here that wishes to testify on this fantastic proposal, And if there is no additional discussion on council, will you please call the vote?
Fish.
Now we're mixing our it's getting very confusing here.
Fish.
No, Mayor, I want to put down a rumor. I was not cited.